Alex, happy Inauguration Day.
Yeah, thank you, I think.
And we're going to talk about presidential sex scandals. In what order shall we do so? There's two I want to address.
Okay.
All right, so
well,
one...
I was just wondering, you know, who's the most famous philanderer of this whole list?
Well, it's interesting. I thought the most famous wasn't even on the list, the ones you sent me, which is the Maria Reynolds affair by Alexander Hamilton. Oh, I guess he wasn't president, of course. Okay, well, that's why he was on the list.
Yeah.
Right. So then that was an awesome scandal where he's getting extorted by her husband. That was fantastic.
Yes.
I think I would, if looking at this list, I suspect Harding probably was the most nefarious and JFK maybe the most recent history discussed, right?
I would think so. I mean, JFK is sort of the most famous of them all. When we think of Playboy presidents, we think of JFK. And he, you know, really was pretty notorious for his time, I would say. I mean, he had, you know, allegedly had affairs, well, we know, with Marilyn Monroe. The list is Angie Dickinson, Blaze Starr, and apparently Frank Sinatra provided him with a pretty constant stream of young women for him to have sex with.
And, you know, there's this, remember that one story about the woman that was like the secretary or something, and they were swimming in what is now the press pool. They're actually swimming in the pool at the White House. And he just told her, go over and have sex with that guy. And it was like, wow, that's sort of stunning misogyny.
Yes. And stunningly sort of depraved for the president of the United States, or how we want to conceptualize or think about the president of the United States. But yeah, there were apparently two well-known White House secretaries that he referred to. They even had nicknames, and you know, people knew that he was having sex with them.
Who else stood up for you?
Well, I think James Buchanan.
I didn't know about that one. I didn't know about that. Tell me
about that. Well, they're saying that he was likely our first gay president. He was the 15th president of the United States, and it was well known that he had a male friend. He was a lifelong bachelor as president, and he was constantly with a man named William Rufus King, who was the vice president under Millard Fillmore. And they were even, Andrew Jackson referred to them as Miss Nancy and Aunt Fancy. So they had a nickname, which means that they were likely, it was likely well known that this was going on.
Why isn't this history, I haven't seen this history, that's a fascinating piece of history, and why that isn't more sort of mined. Is that something that people or historians are looking into deeply?
I think, yeah, probably people don't want to know it, or it's been written about by biographers. But what's interesting about these lists to me is that sex scandals and affairs have been going on in the White House pretty much from the beginning of time. This is not news, and some are more egregious than others, or maybe there was more tolerance or just less media where people knew about it the way they know about it instantaneously today.
And I think the other issue is that the previous so-called sex scandals were really more about long-standing relationships outside of marriage rather than the kinds of things that we know Bill Clinton did say.
That's true. They were long-standing affairs, and I think in many times they were love affairs.
Oh, yeah. Pretty
Grover
clearly.
Cleveland, had a long-standing affair with a married woman, and many, many letters were found, were exchanged between the two of them.
And in a weird way, I think JFK is sort of the dividing line, maybe, where that switched, you know, to something a little more sex addicted.
Yes. Right? I mean, he really does have the profile of a sex addict with these multiple affairs, multiple women coming and going. And it may be because he was hanging out with the Rat Pack and they were notorious but
that not to diminish his legacy. I really know, you know, I just talk about this as a clinical fact. I mean, he was being injected with opioids and stimulants. And this whole business about his back pain is opioid withdrawal. This business about the Addisons is the drug use. He didn't have Addisons. All my drug addicts get endocrine deficiencies from the opioids and whatever drugs they've been given.
That's what I wondered about when I read that. I thought, what could possibly have been inciting this in him? And it looks like he was an all-around addict, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and who knows what if he had survived, I don't know where that would have gone, because they were profoundly, again, another situation, profound maltreatment, mistreatment by his medical caretakers. I mean, just, I do not blame him one molecule for the condition he was in. This was clear medical mismanagement, top to bottom. And then once all that gets going, then you've got, you know, whatever, you know, grows out of that, with the sex addiction being just a feature of the overall addiction. The other one, in addition to James Buchanan, that has a kind of a interesting twist to it, and I want to use some sort of kind word to describe it, which is because James Buchanan, to me, that's an interesting kind piece of history that it'd be nice to know really what the two individuals that he and his partner were experiencing through that. That's fascinating to me. I feel similarly about Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings, which is they had kind of a love affair, I think.
I think they did, and I think that's an infamous story also. This was, she was the, she was related to him by way of his wife.
She was the half-sister, right.
Of Jefferson's wife, Martha. They said they had the same father, and then presumably her mother, Sally Hemings' mother, was African-American.
Right.
And I think this is another case where he loved her. They had something like 11 children,
six children.
They had a lot of children. And she traveled with him everywhere.
Including going to France and, you know, really was a companion. And there, I'm not an expert in the details of that. There are some anthropologists out there that really studied it carefully. And also, you know, people that were related to Thomas Jefferson, the African-Americans, knew it. They would talk about it, and people were very dismissive of it. And now you can prove, you know, if you have some relation to Thomas Jefferson with DNA.
Right. So I think he was probably in love with her. She went everywhere. Maybe, I don't know what kind of arrangement he had with his wife, but they must have had some sort of arrangement about this.
Didn't his wife die? Didn't Thomas Jefferson, didn't she finally die or something? Or I don't know. Again, I'm no expert of that history.
Yeah.
But yes, that's why I would love to hear somebody really look at the human aspect of this piece of history, because, you know, these two people had a love affair, but it was couched in a cultural milieu where the relationship didn't matter or something. I don't know how the humans actually interpreted what they were doing, you know, because they were in love, right? Well, how did they imagine?
And he never granted her her freedom.
I know. He was such an enigma when it came to himself and slavery. He was a mess.
Yes. So I think he had a lot of internalized racism and judgments about what he was doing. And he couldn't, because of the culture he was living in, most likely admit to himself what was true. And he couldn't take a stand for it.
You know, in a weird way, we're just all over the place because we're talking, at least I am, because it is such a presidential day, the inauguration day. But in reading his conversations about race and about African-Americans, in a weird way, yes, he was racist. And he was a slave owner, and he had all kinds of weird ideas that justified it. But he was, in a strange way, less racist than Abraham Lincoln, at least where Abraham Lincoln started, before he met Frederick Douglass and before the Civil War. And there was no doubt Abraham Lincoln saw slavery as wrong, with a capital R, W rather, R,
yes,
capital W.
But it changed for him over time, right?
Well, he by the time he gave the Cooper Union speech, it's one that really got him the presidency, he was clear that slavery was wrong and it needed to. What the problem was is he wasn't prepared to bear the consequences of writing it yet, making it right. He wasn't prepared to fight a war over it. But he became, once the war started, then, you know, he's still focused on preserving the Union rather than righting the wrong of slavery. But ultimately, he was clear slavery was wrong. But he was a racist. I mean, he was a terrible. Yeah. Until he met Frederick Douglass, his racism was terrible. Jefferson, not so much. Jefferson, it turned out, was more interested in just the pragmatism of the so-called historical situation in which the two races found themselves. Isn't that interesting? He just thought it was an untangled. He literally wrote that the only way this could be untangled would be freedom and then 250 years of turmoil. And
he was right about that.
He was getting close. He was. And so here we are. But it's an interesting time to speculate. Do you have an overall sort of take or interpretation of presidents and sexuality and sexual compulsions? Is it you know, the same person that would want to be president would necessarily have these proclivities and have difficulty in adult relations?
I think sort of more in modern times, where we see Lyndon B. Johnson having had affairs and Ronald Reagan being accused of raping a woman in 1952, that predates his presidency, and both of the Bush presidents allegedly having affairs or being accused of rape, Bush Jr. This has to do with power, narcissism, and control. And I think anyone who runs for president or becomes president has to have a modicum of narcissistic entitlement. Doesn't make them full-blown narcissists. But, you know, our new president now has an entire Wikipedia page dedicated to his sexual misconduct allegations, and they number at least 13.
Oh, my God.
So that tells us something.
And that something is, again, to make a more global kind of assessment, that this narcissism is a risk factor for these sorts of behaviors.
It is.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think we're seeing it now, you know, bigger than we ever have. And it's probably a reflection of the narcissistic culture we live in and this voracious sense of entitlement that we're seeing, you know, in the Western culture.
Where is that going, do you think? Because I see, that's why I'm sick of everybody. I must tell you, I'm sick of both sides now because I'm watching a group of anti-capitalist anarchists destroying property in Washington D.C. entitlement.
Yeah.
I'm watching the president's entitlement. I'm watching the history of entitlement here. We're talking about today.
Yeah,
I don't know, where is this going? Is every man an island?
It's incredibly confusing. What's happening right now. We don't know who to believe. We don't know what's true. We don't know who's running what. And so I think this is going to hopefully direct us all back into our own love relationships and look at, you know, what does our own sexuality relationship family mean to us? Because we now know that people that have affairs or leave their relationships for new relationships are no happier than they were to begin with. And this then spreads out to our communities, our cities, and how we want to live our lives. So this is a time of high disruption. And everything's up for reinterpretation and what has meaning to us.
Well, I'm so glad I asked you that question because I like that answer. I'm hoping exactly what you said. I've thought the same thing, that reentrenchment in actual intimate relations, community, what matters, caring for people that we care about, you know, focus at home. I'm hoping that's where we go, but I'm losing faith that that is the case. But Alexandra, as always, I really appreciate you being here. CenterForHealthySex.com is where we go to find more of Alexandra Katahakis, where she is the clinical director, and we'll talk to you again next week, okay?
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much. 800-222-5222 is our phone number. Take a little break. Be right back after this.